Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. I'm recording this on the 30th of March 2020, and I'm adding it on to something that I recorded the day before. I'm here in Johannesburg, where we have the greatest number of coronavirus cases in South Africa. This place is packed. In the various cities and townships that are linked directly together, we've probably got about 20 million people within a radius of about 100 kilometers. So this place is the most jam-packed with people, with whites and blacks. I would guess, it's a guess, that maybe there are about 2 million whites in this same area. That you've got maybe 2 million whites and about 20 million blacks in this area, blacks and other non-whites. In this additional note, before you get to the main stuff, I just want to add my view that yesterday I was spending hours and hours starting to look at some medical stuff because one of my supporters had sent me a very fascinating thing about vitamin C. It had to do with people who had experimented with extremely high doses of vitamin C, dosages which no doctor would even go close to. And I wanted to spread this information. I've got a separate video where I'm going to spread this information. But then I thought, let me go and do a little bit of checking around. And I ended up spending hours watching videos, reading things, going through all sorts of things. And after I went through this process, I must tell you, I am even more skeptical now than I've been in the past. I want to tell you the following, that what we've got here is a totally fake problem. Not only do we have a fake problem, but we've got an even more fake solution. But the real consequences of this is going to be the greatest economic disaster of modern times. It is something that is going to make other economic disasters look like nothing. These economic disasters are coming from the supposed benefits of this stupid lockdown that has been foisted on every country. This panic has been started by the Jewish mass media, and you've got the super rich. I was looking at things that Bill Gates was saying. Bill Gates has now resigned from all his main business positions, which includes Microsoft, Berkshire Hathaway, which is an investment company run by Warren Buffett, who's one of the greatest investors of all time, apparently. Bill Gates has donated $100 million to coronavirus help, and he's now getting involved in this. The rich do not give away their money for nothing. They never give away their money without some purpose, I must tell you. I'm reading that in South Africa, South African banks are giving people bank holidays, and it is aimed at customers who have got good credit records. They don't have to pay on their loans because we are heading into a serious financial meltdown as a direct result of this so-called need to all stay at home and for the entire country to be shut down. All that we have here are people who've taken colds, flu, and pneumonia and created a global panic out of something that has been around for a long time and that is no different to anything else that comes along. They've created a massive panic on the basis of very little. If nobody had even mentioned this thing in the media to the extent that they have, this thing would have come and gone and infected everybody, and hardly anyone would have noticed anything over a period of 6 months or a year. Nobody would even have looked at this thing and concerned themselves with this. I was reading about the second person to die in South Africa. It was a person who died in KwaZulu-Natal. He was aged 74. He already had a problem with melanoma, which is skin cancer. It seems he had quite a bad skin cancer already, and he died after he'd been on holiday in the Kruger National Park. My best guess is that this might be a white guy, but what you're looking at is somebody who's already old and somebody who's already got a serious medical problem, and he's the second to die of it. Every day in South Africa, at least 44 people are murdered. The media doesn't even talk about it, you don't even see it, but they carry on and on and on about this coronavirus. More people are murdered in South Africa every hour than have died so far from coronavirus. My view now is as follows. If this thing was any kind of medical emergency of any kind at all, then the Surgeon General or the top doctors and scientists in the countries could easily have issued a statement telling people to take extra supplements of vitamin D and vitamin C, and the governments could have made these things available at cheaper prices and told everybody not to miss a single day of work. That is all that was needed. It would have been so easy to solve the problem that way. Instead, they've created this incredible lockdown, and this lockdown is going to create unbelievable economic disasters for every month that this thing remains in place. We've got the lockdown for 3 weeks in South Africa, but if I look at how it's going elsewhere, even in the United States, it's looking like it's getting extended. So every month that this lockdown is kept on is going to add incredible economic disaster to the entire world. And it's to an entire world that is totally interlocking and dependent on each other. And every single part of it has ground to a halt. I regard this as a totally fake problem with an even more fake solution. And the solution is going to create problems that are a million times worse than the so-called virus. Either we've got idiots and morons who are solving the problem, or we've got liars and thieves who've got ulterior motives in how they're going about it. Germany has got the lowest death rate of coronavirus in the world. The Germans, even out of the 30,000 who got it, only 0.6% have died, though others say it's 0.9%. But depending on which set of numbers they use, when you compare them, it comes out as follows, that the death toll in Germany, the death rate, is one half of that in the USA. It is 1/12 of that apparently in Italy. And it is 1/5 of that of the entire world. So the Germans are just doing their normal stuff and they're just looking after their people and carrying out their normal medical procedures. And this thing has got a very tiny death rate among the Germans. And the Germans do have lots of old people. And as I've mentioned before, Italy has got 100,000 Chinese in the north of Italy that nobody's talking about. So these other high percentages come from China, Italy, the rest of the world. But in the USA and in Germany especially, the death rate is very, very low. And even for South Africa, you can see you are dealing with the old and the fragile. You're dealing with people well into their 70s. They are the only ones that are truly at risk. And virtually all of them have to have some kind of complications on top of it. As far as I'm concerned, we are living through the greatest scam in the history of the world. The disaster is not the virus. The disaster is the economic response to the virus. Why is there a need for lockdowns? why is there a need for martial law, for curfews, etc., across the entire world? Why is this necessary? The more I look into this thing, the more I think that this thing isn't a problem, and at worst, all you needed was people to take a couple of vitamins and they would be fine. They would never even get this thing. To me, it looks like we're in the midst of the greatest scam in the history of the world, and the disaster that they are creating is an economic disaster that is completely unwarranted and totally needless. So now I'll return to the previous audio that I recorded yesterday, and you can see what I think the future holds. Okay, let's take a look at the coronavirus and the impact it's really going to have. And this is my assessment of the coronavirus's impact. So I've heard other people talk about the fact that the coronavirus might be a bioweapon. It's going to come and slaughter huge numbers of people, etc., etc. But when I look at the information that I found and that my supporters found, then this is really what's going to happen. And I'm recording this on the 29th of March, 2020. 2020, one of the weirdest years of my life. I can't believe things are so weird in this year. And it's a year with such nice numbers, 2020. So it's going to be a year with weird memories, I must tell you, for everyone. One of the things that I forgot to mention in the previous audio or video, depending on how you got it, with coronavirus in South Africa, has to do with another way in which coronavirus can infect the blacks more. Most of the blacks in South Africa and in Africa actually travel in Toyota Hiace minibuses. They take 10 people, and this is the basis of most of black transport in Southern Africa. In fact, probably now in all of Africa. As a side note to this, the inventor of this particular industry is a white guy, P.W. Botha. P.W. Botha of South Africa, the man who was hated the second most, other than Verwoerd, by our enemies. P.W. Botha actually created this very industry under apartheid, and it flourished ever since. This industry was created by him as a method of allowing capitalism to function among blacks. It was illegal in the days of apartheid for whites to own black taxis. And yet, secretly, behind the scenes, whites and blacks were working in partnership on many occasions, where whites bought the taxis and blacks ran them, and they were all making money. But strictly speaking, it was illegal, because he wanted the black taxi industry to be totally run and controlled by blacks only, no whites to be involved. Blacks must buy the vehicles, blacks must build the industry, blacks must profit from it completely. And once this form of travel had been created, it then spread across Africa. So nobody will tell you that the black taxi industry of Africa comes from apartheid South Africa, comes from one of the, quotes, worst white guys to run the country, and probably the greatest and most successful example of black capitalism ever created in Africa. Created by a white guy, Afrikaans guy. So they don't tell you about that. Anyway, the black taxis. Because these things pack a bunch of people together in a vehicle, and many times the blacks even put in more than 10 people in a vehicle, these vehicles are going to be ideal as a means for transmitting disease. So again, as I mentioned in the previous audio, If it should be that corona starts spreading in the winter, then the black taxis are also going to be a place where lots of blacks are gathering together and traveling on these things packed closely. In winter, they'll close the windows. So, black taxis and townships, I think those are going to be two possible areas for spreading of coronavirus if it turns out to be something that has any kind of impact. When this coronavirus came to the fore in the beginning, I've often sat and wondered, what the hell is this about? Is somebody causing it? Or is somebody just being opportunistic? Often in politics and at higher levels, you do get times when everybody, even whites, even Jews, are opportunistic. Napoleon was opportunistic. Hitler also was quick to grab onto any opportunity when it came his way. So when people are wakey wakey, they may grab onto something and use it. So that is one possibility, is that it's opportunistic. The other theory that I thought about in the beginning was that it was a bioweapon. And a number of people have said it's a bioweapon that the Chinese were developing that then got out. I've even got a friend in America who used to study communism a lot, and he did an interview with somebody, and he said, yes, it's a bioweapon from the Chinese and it's gotten out. I don't buy into any of that. And that American friend of mine that I've known for so long, his problem is that he's infected with Christianity end times syndrome. And he lives in California. And since I knew him, which was the early 1990s, and we used to be great buddies, we were like brothers at one point. We spoke so much to each other and wrote so many emails to each other. But the problem with him was he can never let go of the end times and World War III. And for him, World War III is always about Russia nuking America. So he just can't get out of that mode of thinking. And it does relate to his Christianity. And I spoke to him about 2 years ago, and we went over the same thing, and he confirmed it's his Christianity. But he doesn't say so in the open. So he always comes up with good data. He's excellent at gathering data. But like all people who are obsessed with the end times, doesn't matter how many tons of data you accumulate, it still doesn't make those prophecies come true, or your interpretation of the prophecies come true. And my friend, I know a lot about him, and I know a lot about his personal life, and I know things that have happened to him that absolutely convince him that he's had like a sign from God that this stuff is going to happen. But he's had the sign from God since 1985, I think. And God has not come through for him in all that time. So it's kind of sad because otherwise he's very clever and very genuine, actually. He's actually a very nice person. Really decent guy, really great white guy. But totally befuddled by this end times nonsense. I also used to be into the end times garbage. But 9/11 and the things after 9/11 finally started getting me out of this end times crap, and I no longer take any end times nonsense seriously at all. At all. Been there, done that, total waste of time, complete garbage. But unfortunately, my American friend still hooked on it, still hooked on Christianity till his last breath. Still believing, even at his age, as he's heading to 60, still believing that this end times nonsense, Jewish nonsense, is going to come through. And it isn't. Very sad, because he's actually a very talented guy. Very talented, I must tell you. And similarly, he and I disagree on the Jews. Anyhow, so I've thought of those things. One of the things I've also thought of is, could Trump have dropped a bioweapon on the Chinese? Could Trump's people, the CIA, could they have put a little bioweapon out there to screw it up for the Chinese? Because he's been fighting the Chinese a lot with regard to economic warfare. So I even entertained that idea because the Americans have the ability to do it if they really wanted to. But be that as it may, I'm quite happy to settle for the notion that this is something that happened by accident and others are jumping on the bandwagon. The Jews and the rich found out about it quickly. And because China is so critical to them and they have so much invested in China, they may have decided to play this thing out and use it in an opportunistic way. So we'll leave it at that. Perhaps it was planned. We'll see when more solid data comes out. So now let's take a look at the real impact of this coronavirus as I see it. Because one of the possibilities that really is weird for me about this whole thing is why literally the entire world's economic system had to be shut down, especially Europe and America. It really struck me as absolutely weird. And in a certain sense, the corona shutdown could also be seen as the super rich going on strike. You know, if the super rich and the Jews go on strike, we've never seen them on strike. But what if they shut down their businesses? What if they are behind this and they're saying, shut the businesses down, knowing full well the resultant economic impact? And the power of the super rich these days is truly incredible. Professor Quigley, whom we are going to return to on many occasions, Professor Quigley, in his writings about civilization, he stated that the place where the Western civilization has gotten to is that it's reached the age of monopolies. And he calls it monopoly capitalism. And he specifically gives the date for it as being about 1910. And I think that it actually comes from South Africa because huge diamond and gold monopolies were created by Jews from England and Jews from Germany in South Africa. And it also includes guys like Cecil John Rhodes. Now, Professor Quigley has many things to say about the rich and the role of the rich in civilization. But at this point, for our purposes, what Quigley said was that we've entered monopoly capitalism and he saw it as a bad thing and he was waiting for us to get out of it in some way. But we're now in 2020 and monopoly capitalism has been here for 110 years. And it's actually gotten worse and worse, and it's many, many times worse than it was before. Furthermore, the liberals, the elite, and the Jews of America, who are using a lot of stuff that comes from Quigley, they may have misinterpreted or chosen to interpret Quigley in a way that makes the super rich even richer. So nowadays, the super rich can literally walk around anywhere. The CIA, the US government, the Western world will take care of them, look out for them, go and kill people if their business interests, if the business interests of the rich are in any way damaged. The Jews and the super rich can pretty much do anything that they want. And the US government, especially, and the British government as well, but also others will go and kill and smash whoever needs to be smashed. But I think the British and the Americans are the most vicious in this regard, especially the Americans. And the super rich are treated like gods. They can do what they want to do, and everything they do is good in the eyes of the elite. And so we've got a super rich who are completely and utterly out of control. Totally out of control, they can do anything they want, and anything they suggest, no matter how creepy and weird it is bowed down to by the governments, and they go ahead and they do it. and they just do anything the fuck they want. So it has occurred to me that maybe the rich are trying to strong arm countries, because globalism, which is a Jewish concept, globalism is really a mechanism whereby businesses start taking control of individual countries. And they've taken control of Western countries one by one, starting with Britain 300 years ago. And I think then they got control of France later, and after World War II, they've got control of Germany. They managed to get control of America by the early 1900s. And so they have been able to run around and play one nation against the other. And the last nation in Europe that stood up to them was Germany, and that is why we had World War II. Now, the super rich are very good at marketing and all that, and I had wondered whether the super rich are just using coronavirus just to get more arm twisting done on governments in order to strengthen their position. So they screw it up for countries, weaken countries, while they are going to pocket the monies from the disaster that they themselves have helped to engineer. And so one way that I've thought about it was maybe the super rich have decided to go on strike for a while, cause absolute chaos. Maybe it even has an anti-Semitic angle to it, in that they've seen how anti-Semitism and the right wing and racism has been growing in the West. Maybe they've decided it's time to punish the common person. And you'll see the impacts that I'm going to discuss in that regard. I also think that they really hate Trump. Regardless of all the things that Trump has bowed down to them and done for them, I think they really hate him. And the fact that this is in 2020, an American election year, I think there could be some aspect to this, if not even the main aspect being to get rid of Trump. These are things I've thought of and are things that I would not completely put them out of my mind. I think that there is something like this. These people aren't doing this for fun. They're doing it for gain. And there may be many forms of gain that they're going to get out of playing this one scam. In that sense, it's like 9/11. 9/11 goes down, but there are many Jewish scams that go with 9/11, all of which score points for the Jews. And maybe that's what's happening here, is that you've got one huge scam, but they're going to exploit it in 1,001 different ways in different countries, and they've got everybody in the place to exploit it to the maximum that they can. And notice, like 9/11, this is all based on panic. So while everybody is panicking and rushing around and they're not thinking straight, these super rich are now coming in with their ideas, and at the time, in a state of panic, people say, yes, yes, shutting down all the economies is good. Yes, it's going to save our lives. Meanwhile, it's actually going to create the real disaster. So in my view, the real disaster is not the virus. The real disaster are the apparent measures taken to combat the virus. You see, in my view, it's not the virus that's going to do the main damage. And a year from now, when we get to sit back and look at the situation, I think we'll find that the deaths and the illnesses from the virus were minor compared to the supposed solutions, that in actual fact, the cure, the suggestion of shutting down economies, that is the real thing that's going to cause huge damage. So that is how I think this is going to play out. Now let's take a look at it from a political angle. In South Africa, President Ramaphosa is very close to the Jews. My own view is that he may have converted to Judaism, actually. But that's another point I'll raise later. And the Jews have been doing their utmost to boost Ramaphosa. They've been doing incredible things. They've allowed him to do things and have supported him in ways that they've not done since Thabo Mbeki and since Mandela. And despite everything that they're doing, Ramaphosa is not coming out looking good, and the country is in real trouble. The country has got serious fundamental economic problems now. This is a subject for another video, because I was looking at various charts and things, and I got to tell you that this country's future looks pretty bleak, and it's a slow slide downwards. And as we go into this decade, it's going to be worse than the last decade. There are just bigger and bigger problems that are just gaining ground. And the government is in no way, shape or form able to curb any of this. These are fundamental problems. They come from the mismanagement of the economy, from the theft, from the inefficiency, from the firing of the whites. There are many, many things that the government has done that's created this nasty situation. And Ramaphosa was brought in as the guy who's going to fix everything after Zuma, because the Jews hated Zuma, and he's actually not been successful. And he's actually gone from bad to worse. So where this virus could come in to help Ramaphosa has been the suggestion that this virus actually is going to boost Ramaphosa's image, because things are still going to get worse, and even worse than they were going to get. But Ramaphosa can now say, well, you see, it wasn't just apartheid that was the problem, as these buggers always do, but it was also the virus. And oh, we fought such a brave battle and we overcame it. It could have killed us all, but we won. And despite all the terrible things in the economy, we came through and we're actually doing better than we would have done. And he'll talk some shit along those lines. And everybody will clap their hands and they'll say, oh, that was so fantastic. Yes, Ramaphosa, you saved us. And, you know, coronavirus would have killed us all. But, oh, thanks to your brilliant, fantastic leadership, that didn't happen. So that is how I think the mass media, the Jews, and the assorted scum are going to play this thing out. They're going to say, oh man, Ramaphosa, the fact that the country is totally fucked isn't due to you being an incompetent piece of shit. It's due to coronavirus, but you stopped it from being 100 times worse. And then everybody will go away, and the white liberals and everybody will go away, and they'll say, oh, Ramaphosa, he saved us, you know. Now, the other thing that I think they're trying to do, though every American that I've spoken to who watches the political scene tells me that they are absolutely convinced that Trump is going to win this election. However, I think that there's something of a battle going on among the American elite, in that you have this Jewish element or whatever that wants to get rid of Trump. No matter what Trump does, no matter how good he is for Israel, they've got to get rid of him, because they had other plans and they were getting America closer and closer to communism. So I think that the other part of this, and maybe even the key part of the entire plan, might have been to try and drive Trump out of office to stop him having another 4 years, even though he's done virtually nothing for whites. But here and there he does something that is pretty impressive. Like, I've watched a couple of interviews where Trump is talking to journalists and he's really giving them hell. And if there's one thing that Trump has done that's probably been his greatest contribution to the Western world and to whites, it is his attack on the mass media, his vicious attacks on the media. And he's even taken the New York Times and the Washington Post. Washington Post is owned by Bezos, the owner of Amazon. So he's actually taken two big influential newspapers owned by Jews to court as well. And openly he spurns the journalists. He talks down to them. He mocks the entire industry in their faces, in public. And he says, you people are the creators of fake news. In other words, you're lying. And I think if there's one thing Trump has done, Trump might be the president, but he's not got much power as the president. However, when he's functioning on Twitter or when he gives press conferences, he actually gets a whole lot more done. He's probably more effective on Twitter than he is as president of the USA. And he's also very good when he deals with some of the journalist scum of the mass media. And I think that he's done a massive thing. He's really contributed to the Western world by attacking the mass media and tearing them down openly in front of everybody. I think if there's one thing he's done that we can say truly has been good for our race and for the Western world, it is that. In that sense, they must hate him intensely. But they want to get rid of him. And I saw that the stock markets have now lost so much value that the stock market is actually lower than when Trump became president. And I'm wondering if they are going to use that kind of thing to try and say to Americans, oh, this man totally mismanaged the country. We are worse off than we were 4 years before. And they start meddling with the cause and effect and screwing things up. And then you may find certain idiots buying into it, etc. So I still think there's a Trump angle to this thing. But the good news is that every American I've spoken to monitors politics has said to me, there's no chance in hell that Trump is going to lose this election. And by the way, in the previous election, I was quite sure that they were busy rigging the election as it was taking place. I gathered data at the time and I was going to create a video about it, but I never got round to that. So I think that this is how they're going to play it with Ramaphosa and with Trump politically. Now, the next thing, this is where we're starting to get into the really big parts of the consequences of this thing. The next one is economic, and the final one is cultural. Now, these are going to be the two areas where this virus, for what it's worth, is going to have its greatest impact. Economically, the damage done to the stock markets and to economies is unprecedented. It is worse than the 2008 financial meltdown. And that thing, I must tell you, was enormous. And they rushed very quickly to plug that hole because the entire banking system of the United States and the world was going to implode really quickly. And the super rich ran to the president and they begged him for $700 billion to bail them out, obviously white taxpayer money mostly, to bail them out. And that is how they averted the total and utter implosion of the entire banking system of the world. I cannot impress enough upon you the seriousness of the 2008 meltdown. It was the greatest crisis in my entire life financially, and I looked at it very closely. And I want to tell you, it was huge. The whole thing was just melting down. And then they ran off to the president with the too big to fail nonsense, and the US Congress voted them $700 billion to be paid for by the common taxpayer, mostly whites. And so that's how they managed to save the entire world's banking system from implosion. It would have taken down the whole world. And then what the bankers did was they went crazier than before. They went and did even wilder things. The bubble which had started bursting, the financial bubble that had started bursting, they went out and they created even bigger bubbles even faster. The super rich are full of all kinds of scams, and they've got scams that are so advanced that the super rich will never run out of money. Quite a number of my friends in America are constantly talking about the fact that there's going to be, they call it an economic reset, that everything's going to crash to the ground, then we're going to pick up the pieces, and then we can start again. But they don't seem to realize how money actually is created. And the money that comes out of the Fed and the reserve banks is itself just money sucked out of thin air. Then the credit, which is created by the banks, which is based on that, is an even bigger scam. But there are other scams that are even more enormous. In the early 1990s, when I was following financial stuff, the thing that was blowing some of the investors away, some of the top guys in the world, I used to read the writings of the top investment consultant in the world, Harry Schultz, who lived in Switzerland. Harry Schultz used to talk about a thing called derivatives. Nowadays, you may have heard of a thing called an ETF, an exchange-traded fund. It's almost like a stock in a company, but it's actually in a commodity. It's not actually linked to a fixed company. Well, that's a derivative. That is one of the forms of derivatives. Now, those derivatives are imaginary markets that have been created out of nothing, literally. So you have these things called derivatives, which are based on markets that trend and monitor other markets. So you've got huge amounts of money invested in something that literally does not exist. And there are profits made out of those things as well. Derivatives is an enormous scam, and it's got huge amounts of money tied up in it as well. So from what I can see, the super rich have got so many scams going and so many tricks going that it doesn't matter if they lose trillions over here, because they've got other imaginary trillions sitting somewhere else. And I don't think that the system is actually just going to implode and there's going to be a reset. I'm actually of the opinion that they can create bubbles, financial bubbles, stock bubbles, property bubbles, all kinds of economic bubbles. They can create them literally into eternity. They can invent money out of thin air and apportion it among themselves and have imaginary markets that function. And the amounts of money hidden away there is enormous. And the British and the Americans also have other monies that they've managed to seize and corner, because the British are huge into banking. And the British alone have got about $50 trillion hidden away in other imaginary places. There are vast amounts of monies out of there, amounts of monies beyond all imagination. And the super rich hide large amounts of their own money. So when you see that the Oppenheimers are only worth $7 billion or 70 million rand, this is actually nothing. They've hidden their real monies away elsewhere. Most of the real money of the super rich is hidden away. It does not exist. You only know about the money that's sitting in public companies. All their other assets, they're constantly siphoning money out of their big businesses, and they're constantly siphoning money out and hiding it away through Swiss banking, through British banking, through American banking, and they're hiding these monies away and they're putting it into all kinds of fictitious nonsense. So you cannot imagine the scale on which the super rich are working. They are working in tens of trillions of dollars, not even just a few trillion. I'm talking tens of trillions. There's huge amounts of money that the super rich have that's all hidden away that you won't see it in the newspapers. Nobody will tell you about it. There are even private banking companies where a bank exists just for one customer. I'm not kidding you. In the British system, they've got special banks where a bank functions for only one customer. These super rich have got their own tailor-made banking and investment systems that they run. They've got so much money, they don't know what to do with it. So even though the stock market's lost about $5 trillion due to coronavirus, don't worry about that. That's peanuts. In fact, just like 2008, they've already run off to Congress and they've asked for a thing called a stimulus package. So it's the same as the 2008 bailout. The terminology is slightly different. So instead of a $700 billion bailout for the banks, they call it a $2.2 trillion stimulus package. So it's about three times the size. It's more than three times the size of the bailout in 2008 because the bubble is bigger than it was before. And every time the bubble starts imploding, they're going to need more money than the time before. So maybe in 10 or 15 years' time, when the next bubble collapses, they'll probably have to come back and say, listen, we need about $7 trillion or something. You know, we need a new stimulus package. These people will be able to scam the system endlessly. The super rich are like gods. The politicians and governments crawl on their hands and knees for them. They regard them as perfect. They regard them as gods. Their word is worshipped. And that is how it's working. And the super rich have already been out of control, and they're just getting more out of control. But don't worry, they're never going to become poor. It's the other people who are going to become poor. It's everybody else who's going to be hit. So these people can inflate endlessly. Now, the US dollar is so big, especially like in Africa and many parts of the third world, US dollars are used along with other currencies. The US dollar is so huge nowadays that I think that even if the US government prints lots of fake money and puts more into circulation, it should lead to hyperinflation, but I don't think it will. I think that it'll take a much longer time for the hyperinflation to come. It's going to take years, many years, and by then they will have grown things to the next level. The super rich and the Jews seem to have unlimited capacity to produce endless amounts of money. I don't think their system is going to collapse by itself. I think their system will be able to survive, and they will be rich when others aren't rich. So we will return to Professor Quigley and the things he said, but I regard Professor Quigley as the high priest of the American liberal elite. And for the record, he was a Christian, can you believe? But he's actually a very fascinating fellow. But you got to understand what he was trying to say. And that is a whole set of discussions by itself. One of the reasons why I have the stance that I have, where I tell you that I don't believe that the super rich can collapse through their own system, is because here in South Africa, I watched the corporate world for many years, and I watched it becoming more inefficient and all the loads that were being put on it by the government and the blacks. And I was convinced that if there was something that was going to implode, it was going to be the corporate world, the banks of South Africa, the big companies that are floated on the stock exchange in South Africa. I was absolutely convinced that the big companies were going to go down at some point, that eventually their interaction with the blacks and with communism and inefficiency and their anti-white stuff, that it would eventually backfire on them and they would go down. But time and time again in South Africa, I was horrified to see that every time there's a crisis, and it didn't matter which industry this was, I used to watch the car industry, the second-hand car industry, the new car industry, all different kinds of industries, farming, you name it. Every time there was a crisis, I was waiting for some of the big companies to go bankrupt. And on the rare occasion where some of them did go bankrupt, all that happened, like in the case of South Africa's banks, we've got four big banks that pretty much control more than 90% of the entire banking sector. But we used to have a lot more banks, and we also used to have, I think, building societies, if I remember correctly. Now, we used to have a number of financial institutions in the time of apartheid, quite a bigger variety than we have now. And when there was an economic meltdown, all that happened was that just before these things went bankrupt, the bigger organizations came and swallowed them. An example is Absa. Absa in South Africa swallowed all the Afrikaans banks and building societies. It swallowed the whole lot. That's where they went into, because there were quite a few of them. And so it went on with other banks. So what happens is that the really rich companies don't actually just go bankrupt and everybody loses their money. What happens is they're bought out by somebody bigger. So there's never a total collapse, and somebody bigger grabs them at a cheaper rate and also grabs their market share, which is the most important thing. So you find that all that happens is that the competition at the high end of the market actually becomes less. You have less and less companies servicing a particular sector, and it grows closer and closer to oligopolies and then towards monopolies. South Africa, for example, is totally filled with oligopolies in every single industry: banking, insurance, you name it, all the financial types of instruments, even the industries like supermarkets, etc. You'll find big oligopolies control South Africa's markets. The same is true for mining, and so it goes on. And you find that they just swallow the smaller guys. And then I noticed, to my utter horror, that these bigger corporates were so powerful that even if they really ran into huge problems, like in the car market, where they were manufacturing cars and they were now running into serious financial difficulties, they had such clout and they could team up with banks and financial institutions that they were able to go and take an entire industry where they should be losing, and they actually changed things to such a degree that the next thing you know is they're busy driving second-hand car dealers bankrupt, and they're able to actually get people to buy new cars, and by messing with the prices and the interest rates, etc., they're able to destroy smaller competition who normally would have been able to beat them. And I began to realize in every single industry that what you get is you get these enormous companies, and they are able to destroy smaller companies owned by individuals and small partnerships. You see the same thing with the farming industry. We used to have 60,000 farmers. Now there are 30,000 farmers. But you will find a new phenomenon that's never quite been as powerful as it is now, and it's the concept of the mega farmer. And the mega farmers are getting richer and richer, and they are so rich that they have personal helicopters and they fly around in helicopters. And these farmers have got the financial clout to destroy other farmers. And they are even teaming up with mining companies, etc. So we've gone from 60,000, let's call it family farms, down to 30,000, but the mega farmers have been chewing up and gathering up all these other farms. And actually, most of these mega farmers, if not all of them, are white. And so you find that as they get richer and more powerful, they actually start destroying the things that are smaller than them. And we're getting to the situation where they're trying to deliberately, between them and the government, they're deliberately trying to destroy the remaining family farms, if you could call it that, in South Africa. And there's nobody that can stop them. And I began to realize some years ago that in all industries, that it is the big companies that will crush the mid-level and smaller companies. The big will never go bankrupt. They'll always use all their power and connections, and they'll help each other, and they will keep crushing people below them. And it's actually the number of businesses below them that are the ones that are going bankrupt. And those people are being wiped out. So you're getting medium-sized companies getting wiped out and small companies getting wiped out. The horrific situation is that the small white businessman can be wiped out by these big companies. The farmer can be wiped out. So when there's an economic meltdown, it's not the big that are going to go bankrupt. It's the medium-sized and small who are going to go bankrupt. They are the ones that are going to be driven out of business. It's the small guy who's always, always the loser. And that is the freaky part about this, is that when the economic train hits people, it's actually going to be the people at the bottom that are going to take the biggest hit. At the beginning of this crisis, I read an estimate where they said 50 million people would become unemployed because of the coronavirus, because of the economic impact. But more lately, I've been reading that they've downsized that to 25 million unemployed. Maybe they will still reduce that number later. But either way, you're looking at anything from 10 to 20 million people in the Western world who are going to lose their jobs. Already, people have lost their jobs. Half of the people in the Norwegian airline business were already fired at the outset. Lots of whites have already been fired. Even in America, the queues for the unemployed went to over 3 million. So the really big problem here is that firstly, there are large numbers of people who are going to lose their jobs. The second thing is we don't know how long it will take those people to be able to get jobs again. We don't know how long it's going to take. And are all of those people going to be able to get some kind of job in the next 2 or 3 years? These are the kinds of questions that should really be bothering us. Now, there are the problems of who's going to take the hardest hits. Will South Africa take the hardest hit? Will America take the hardest hit, or Europe? It appears to me from the estimates that actually South Africa might not take as much of a hit as the other places. And my personal guesswork is that it's because America especially, and also Europe, but America especially, is much more tied into the globalist network. And it's the globalist network that's going to take the biggest beating in this downturn. Because remember now that all of Europe, all of America, all of China, South Africa, Australia, I was reading even Chile, it's like most countries in the world, India, most countries in the world, especially all the biggest economies, are shutting down. And they are shutting down production for, at the very least, weeks. And in some cases, it's turning into months. Like in China, it's been 2 months. Now, this is going to have an incredible ripple effect on the entire world because there are billions of people who have needs and requirements, and all of their economic activity, or most of their economic activity, has been curtailed. So suddenly, everyone's going to be short of cash, especially the people at the bottom, especially the common workers. So people are going to be cash-strapped. Small businesses are going to be very cash strapped. And how is this engine going to be restarted? And how quickly will it take this engine to restart? Because this entire engine was functioning and every part of it was linked to every other part of it, except for South Africa. South Africa, not so much. Except for the big company called NASPAS, National Press, which is Afrikaans and which has huge holdings in China. Now, they are our biggest investment in China and overseas. I see that NASPAS took a hit in sometime before October last year. So they seem to already have actually gone through the worst of Corona. And so maybe they're not as affected as one would have expected. But anyway, for South Africa, I was reading that they expect the GDP to go down by 10%. But for the United States, they were estimating a 30% drop in GDP in the next quarter. Of course, maybe these estimates are overstated as well, but either way, these are big, big numbers. And it's going to hit people immediately. So the economic factors, these shutdowns, and the number of people who've died are just a tiny amount compared to the impact of these shutdowns. You've got entire countries all across the world, the most developed countries, the biggest economies, everybody just shutting their industries as much as they could, and it's going to have huge impact. There are already airlines that have gone out of business. The airlines were so competitive that the slightest thing could put entire airlines out of business. Already at least one airline's gone out of business. There are hotel chains that are going to face shutdown. There are lots and lots of knock-on effects from this thing. They are saying that in America they are expecting unemployment to go up to perhaps 20%, and it'll be the highest unemployment America's ever had. So this thing is going to hit really hard, and millions of whites are going to lose their jobs. And I think that small businesses and medium businesses are going to be hit harder by this. And the big businesses will gobble them up and take their market share, because that's what normally happens when you have a crisis. The big ones seize the market share of the little ones, and then they can carry on with that. So I think that the lower you go down to this middle, the mid-sized business, the small business, the person who just has a job, that as you go lower in the structure, you're going to see people getting hurt more and more and more. And you know, there's a quote, I'm not sure if it was from the Rothschilds, the Jewish Rothschilds who were big into banking, but there's a quote which goes, you must buy when the blood is running in the streets. The rich have got tons of money. They can fire anybody they want. They'll still be rich. Even if they lose a couple of billion or tens of billions, they are still wealthy. They just fire all the people and shut down all the companies that they need to shut down. They will still be wealthy. They wait for the prices to drop, and then they come in and they buy everything up at a cheaper price. And so they carry on as normal. But I'm thinking that it's the people at the bottom end who lose their jobs, who lose small businesses, who maybe even lose medium businesses. I think these are the people who are really going to take the hits. And if somebody's had his own business for many years and his business is wiped out, he's going to be very embittered, as are people who lose their jobs and they struggle to find new employment. And I think this is going to be something that's going to have huge knock-on effects culturally, which we're going to get to. They are saying that they're expecting the US economy to start turning upwards in the second half of the year, but even so, it's going to take quite a while. They say that even by the end of next year, they're expecting 5% unemployment. Now, the other thing about America versus South Africa is that you've had the US government saying that they'll give people money and assistance, and then you've had Ramaphosa in South Africa also talking as if he's as good as the Americans, and he's been talking all his shit about you're going to be able to get this and you can claim that, and even the Ruperts and the Jewish Oppenheimers are going to see to it that every business gets 500 Rand or 600 Rand. When your entire business goes down and you get that tiny little pittance from the super rich, I assure you it's going to have no meaning at all. You're going to be seriously unhappy that something that you worked on your entire life or you put your entire savings and energy into, when you lose that thing, you're going to be seriously unhappy. You are going to be seriously pissed off. And the super rich are going to come, take up your market share, buy up a few things at a few pennies on the dollar, and they're going to carry on. But now, Ramaphosa has promised many things in South Africa. I spent my entire life writing computer systems for business purposes. I did this for more than 30 years. I've worked in all kinds of industries, and I want to tell you, when I listen to Ramaphosa talk about all the systems that people are going to be able to use to claim money back, etc., I don't think he's even got a fraction of those systems ready, and those things are going to require some development and testing and setup for quite a while. I don't think that South Africa can move as fast as the Americans to recover from this. So I think the Americans will be able to recover from the hits much faster than South Africa. America is a much more dynamic country and it's much more functional than South Africa. So despite them taking big hits, I think they'll also turn it around pretty quickly. But I think in South Africa, whatever the hits are, our recovery rate is going to be slow to nil. I don't see that this country is going to be able to recover all that much of what it's lost. I think we're still on a slow, long-term downhill because of these blacks. Europe seems to run on something of a socialist system. The governments seem to have more control there. So Europe might recover more slowly, but they also seem to be more stable in certain ways. So I still think Europe and America will recover out of this better than South Africa. But there are big losses that are coming out of this. One of the questions that I have is, who's going to come off the worst in this? And I'm thinking that China is going to come off the worst out of this. That in the end, the entire Western world, the Jews and the super rich, were taking the industries of the entire Western world, Europe, Britain, America, Canada, and they were moving it into China. China was basically the factory of the world. That's the way these Jewish scum angled this thing. And they've been pumping untold numbers of trillions of dollars and Western science and Western technology into communist China. A terrible, terrible idea. But I think Jews were the main drivers in this thing. I think that this thing is actually going to end up hurting China more than the West. As much as the West has been hurt by this, I think China is the one that's going to come out the worst of all in the end. Because everyone's going to immediately start looking at moving away from some of this Jewish elite globalism. And that is one of the good things that I see coming out of this. So let's get on to the cultural angle of things. So the economic is going to be bad, and I think it's going to take countries quite a while to recover, some faster than others. But this thing is going to leave a mark on every single country. One of the areas that's gaining a big boost out of this is, interestingly enough, the internet and the whole concept of working from home. This is fantastic. The internet is getting a huge boost out of this. Even in South Africa, the internet is getting an enormous boost. And this may be one of the positive long-term benefits of this, is that you're going to have people working from home more than in the past. Even though things will get to a point where we can go back to the way things were before, I think that there are so many new areas, among them being working from home, that are coming out of this thing, that although you will find some will want to go back to the old ways, there are going to be many positives that come out of it. And things like working from home will probably have gained a big boost from this. And it'll be something that's here to stay in a bigger way than ever before. So the internet and working from home are big winners in this. And this is also an example of the white man's technology. The white man's technology allows this to happen. If the white man's technology wasn't there, we wouldn't have had these options. But it's there and it's running and it's solid and it's firm and dependable. And it's just going to take up the slack in an instant. And that's going to be one of the great benefits that's going to come out of this. So among the negatives is travel. Even things like traveling to work might not be quite the same as it was in the past. A huge negative is international travel. Just like 9/11 screwed up international travel for us and made international travel a misery thanks to all the stupid security that came out of 9/11, we have got even worse things coming. Now you're going to have medical certificates and other things. Countries are going to be much stricter on who's allowed to come in, and you're going to have tests done, etc. I think that you're going to find there's a new level of misery and cost involved in international travel. This means bad things for airlines, bad things for hotels, bad things for tourism. I have anyway wondered for many years whether Europe and America, especially Europe, aren't relying too much on foreign tourism. And maybe tourism slowing down will be a good thing. And it'll allow those countries to start looking at better utilizing their human resources and their capital. Thanks to the Jews and the globalists, the United States depends on China for 80% of its medical supplies now. And all kinds of things are manufactured in China now that weren't manufactured there before, and the entire Western world is dependent on these things. So, among the good economic things that are going to come out of this, I think this is going to be a huge nail in the coffin of Jewish globalism, in the idea that you're going to organize the entire world and different countries are going to do different tasks. Truly, these people are involved in mega planning of things, and they shouldn't have these powers to begin with, because I don't believe that these things are good for the Western world at all. So I think that the good news is that many governments, Western governments, are going to start looking out for their strategic interests, and they're going to start saying, we can't source these things from China, we need to get it from a local, more reliable supply. Maybe some Europeans will start buying things from other Europeans, and some people will create an industry that will help in this regard. But I think that maybe the good benefit of this is that we see the end of globalism. I've been wondering whether globalism has been coming to an end, and I've been watching it especially with regard to interest in third world economies. They always spoke about the developing economies. And the developing economies are no longer developing. And I've already been asking the question from some investment analysts I know. I've already been posing them the question in the last year or two as to whether globalism is coming to an end. Because it's to me as if this thing is not growing anymore and it can't grow anymore. But this coronavirus may actually be a real knock on the head for this thing and actually bring globalism to a quicker end than before. And I think China is going to be the loser, though the rich and the elite will try to bail China out as much as possible. But maybe the good thing is that certain important industries are going to move back to Europe and back to America. So that could be a good long-term consequence. Turning to the cultural side of things, the alternate media on the internet has been around for more than 20 years now. And the alternate media, which they've tried to kill with every ounce of energy they could, has spread to such a degree that even trying to use the social media to kill it was not successful, and people are still able to communicate via much of the social media, except perhaps for Twitter, which is way too tight. And the alternate media even now have a couple of their own smaller social medias. We even have our own video channels now in place of YouTube, which was used massively to try and destroy our video and audio message. So we've got things like BitChute now. I think that the alternate media is older and more mature and more stable than it's ever been. And it also has quite a big following, and that whites generally are, to use an American term, more woke. They're more woken up. And people are asking more questions than ever before. That is whites. And I think that this thing, if I look at the way that people have reacted in just the last few months, like when Epstein died, when the Jewish pedophile Epstein died, apparently from suicide in jail, virtually nobody in the alternate media believed that. I definitely didn't believe it. Nobody believed it. Whites are therefore much more skeptical in a bigger way than ever before. Whites have never been this skeptical. And they don't trust the mass media. And as I've mentioned, Trump himself has played a big role in helping this along. When this virus came out, people lost no time in looking for ulterior motives, not believing the mass media story. People were already totally suspicious in 1,001 different ways. There were so many different conspiracy theories and angles that came out of it in no time at all that I think that this thing is just going to fuel that skepticism and that distrust of the mass media, of governments, of big organizations. That as time goes by and more facts come out about this, that you are going to find that the distrust just grows even faster than before and with a greater intensity than before. Because this thing has come to everybody's doorstep, nobody can ignore this thing. This thing has come and it's planted itself on your doorstep. You are under quarantine, you're under martial law, sitting in your house or your apartment or your flat. And this thing is touching everybody. Everybody in the Western world, all whites, are going to suffer some kind of discomfort, whether it's financial or other, in one way or another from this event. This has come to touch everybody personally. And because of that, it's going to be different to 9/11 and to 2008, because it touches people personally. And people are going to be asking questions. And if those people have lost their jobs or lost their businesses, or they've managed to survive with their businesses, but they took huge losses in the process, those people are going to ask a lot of questions. And while everybody is quick now to say, oh, well, we're going to save our lives by sitting at home, later when they see that not many people died from this thing and that they took personal big losses in this matter, they're going to start asking difficult questions. And if more information comes out that shows that there was lying, I think that this is going to trigger even more skepticism and the growth of the alternate media bigger than 9/11 did, bigger than the 2008 meltdown. 9/11 was really a big impact thing on common people, more so than the 2008 thing, even though 2008 financial meltdown was a bigger event and a much more dangerous one. But they managed to stop it from hitting the common man to such a degree. However, this one, I think this one is going to wake people up faster than ever before, and it's going to spur people on. People who previously tried to ignore these things as much as possible. Like here among some of my friends, I noticed some of them have been trying to live their lives in such a way so as to ignore politics at all times. Ignore politics. And then to their horror, when they were told that they had to shut down their businesses, go into lockdown, they almost lost their minds. And they have tried to live their lives without taking notice of the mass media, trying their utmost to just focus on their personal lives. And when this came to visit them, they started going quite crazy. And I think those kinds of people who've tried to remain zombies, as Alfred Schaefer would call them, they've tried to remain zombies, they've tried to believe in the system, that even they are going to start asking questions. So I think that this thing is going to spur on the awakening of whites and the alternate media faster than ever before. And the many, many questions that are going to come out of this are not only going to piss people off, but it's going to stir up the awakening even more. And in the alternate media, there are lots more people ready to roll and looking for whistleblowers and things to go to work on. I'm telling you, I think that this thing could stir whites in a bigger way than ever before. Furthermore, it's happened to everybody at the same time, which is absolutely astounding. It doesn't matter whether we live 15,000 kilometers from each other or 20,000 kilometers from each other. We're all impacted by the same thing almost equally. It thus gives us a shared common experience, which is going to bind us together, and we're going to look even harder and closer at the system. I think that all round this is going to be excellent for whites, and that whites are going to be moving even faster in the alternate media, and whites are going to look to see what the hell is going on, and they'll be getting it out to other whites faster than ever before. I really think that side of it is going to spur things on. And when people find out that they've lost money, they've lost their jobs, and there's been some naughtiness going on, they're going to be seriously pissed off. And while everyone's in a good mood now, I think later people are going to be getting really angry. Once the fear melts away and they start looking at their actual lives and their actual losses, I think there are whites who are going to be seriously pissed off. So I think many things will still come from this. And these cultural things, these changes in behavior, these changes in thought patterns, these things are going to be here to stay. So I think this thing is going to kick off huge things. And don't expect it to just happen tomorrow. I think a year from now, you will see things well underway and lots of things moving around like never before. So I think that while the economic impact is going to be much, much bigger than the actual number of deaths from the so-called coronavirus, I think the cultural impact is going to be enormous and it's going to be lasting. 2020 unquestionably is a 9/11 type year, and the world will never be the same again, no matter how much it tries. But I think it's a step forward in the right direction, and I think whites in general will be pushed along with this, and our cultural and political agendas will probably gain bigger impetus from this. There's going to be all kinds of things. Even the whites sitting here in South Africa, sitting quietly, obeying the law, when they see the blacks are running around, the blacks are doing other things, and later maybe the government says, if the government were to come and say, look, we need a longer lockdown, people are going to get pissed off. I think people will sit down and take this lockdown for their 3 weeks. But once it goes beyond that, and once some of the clown show starts coming out, there are going to be whites who are going to say, hey, this is a load of shit, and this is impacting me, and I don't see why this should impact me. I think there's going to be an anger that will come out of this that is greater than any anger that came out of 9/11 or 2008. This thing has got the potential for real anger, real long-term change. So I think it's going to push us along further, faster, even though that might not have been the original intent. Maybe among the original intent was even to punish the lower-level whites for their anti-Semitism and racism. But I don't think that that punishment is going to work. I think the anger that's going to come from the bottom is going to be greater. The next audio or video that I'm going to put out, which relates to all these things, is going to be the one about vitamin C, very high dosages of vitamin C. I've actually been even asking friends who have some good knowledge on medical things, and they are confirming that this vitamin C thing has got serious potential. So the next thing to watch out for is the vitamin C issue. That, I think, is the final thing that can be of use in this silly corona situation and into the future. It's going to be about doctors and people who've experimented in America with extreme high dosages of vitamin C and what they found. And this could be very, very useful as a survival and health tool for whites, I think. So keep an eye open for that. And then I'd like to return to normal programming and ignore coronavirus and return to politics, race, and history and the things that are really important to whites. Because whites, especially in South Africa, but also everywhere else, do not know about their own origins, they don't know their history, they know nothing about their past, and there are certain things they need to know so that we can plan a future for ourselves and survival despite our enemies not wanting us to survive. And in the case of the Boers in South Africa, a good point regarding them is that even when their enemies didn't want them to prosper, even when the British came and harassed them and mucked them around and tried to steal their countries, even when there was a definite desire to stop them from surviving and prospering, they managed each time to find a way to do it. And so have other whites in other parts of the world, like the French in Canada. They've also had things where people have moved against them. And despite all the nasty little tricks, they also survived. But lots of whites are like this. The Germans are like this. Most whites are like this. And we should not concern ourselves with the fact that others want us dead and others want us to be powerless. We must do like others have done in the past, which is we don't care what the fuck they are wishing for us. We are going to survive anyway. Even if it means over some of their dead bodies. But we're going to live, and they're not going to stop us. They can try all they want to, they're not going to succeed. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading. And experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.